This is Max Entman, and I'm here at CSIS with Raymond Dubois. He's a senior advisor focusing on international security policy and defense management reform. And we're speaking in advance of the CSIS Global Security Forum sponsored by Finmeccanica Corporation. You can watch this live on May 13th at csis.org. Mr. Dubois will be on a panel about the impact of the potential loss of U.S. overseas military bases on the United States' ability to project power. So let's get into the nuts and bolts of that. First, what are the obstacles to overcome with regards to U.S. basing in Okinawa?
Well, Max, I think that it is important to recognize that power projection is not a function of permanent installations overseas. That was true, to be sure, after the end of the Second World War and during the Cold War, where presence, physical presence on a permanent basis, carried with it signals and real power with respect to the Soviet Union and China, and could be argued that were deterrent factors in terms of their tendency, shall we say, to adventure around the world to the deleterious effects with respect to our interests. Now, today, 2010, I think it's important to recognize, as I indicated, that how one projects power is not just in terms of physical presence. It is in terms of other types of presence, rotational presence, temporary presence, staging presence, overseas task forces, prepositioned stocks of military equipment and ammunition, and most important, the involvement of the United States military with our allies, both NATO and ASEAN and other areas, in terms of training and interoperability. As was noted when I was in the Pentagon, when I was the Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Installations and Environment, we did some serious analyses of how quickly one could project power, and in this case specifically, how quickly one could deploy forces, army forces, infantry, and artillery and armor forces literally halfway around the world. And we found that the speed of movement of the personnel had nothing to do with where they were permanently assigned. That is to say, you could move an infantry battalion, the personnel of that infantry battalion or brigade, as quickly from Fort Bragg as you could from Germany. Then that led us to the conclusion that the expense by which the United States taxpayer funded overseas permanent installations needed to be taken into serious consideration. The issue, this then one can segue into the issue that is for today the most troublesome, the most problematic installation or basing issue before us, and that is the issue of Okinawa and the issue of the Futenma Marine Corps Air Station in southern part of the Okinawan island. As we know, the current Prime Minister of Japan, when he ran for office, saying that he was going to review the original agreement between the Japanese government and the U.S. government in terms of the closing of Futenma Marine Corps Air Station and moving those air assets, especially the helicopter assets, to Camp Schwab in the northeastern part of Okinawa, and the construction of an airfield and land strip, an airstrip, offshore from this Camp Schwab, and building it on a reef with landfill and pilings, etc. This caused, at the time of its announcement, although it was originally, interestingly enough, discussed back almost 15 years ago, 1996, although the final agreement was reached and signed in 2006 to move the Futenma helicopter assets to Camp Schwab, The objections which came from several quarters, not just the environmentalists, who, by the way, are still quite vocal about their objections in terms of the endangered species called the dugong, marine mammal, which uses the coral reef offshore from Camp Schwab as a nesting area, if you will, and a breeding area. That in and of itself creates a great deal of problems, not just to the environmentalists, but for those of us who are concerned about endangered species. The other issue, of course, the cost of creating an air field in water, wherein you have to create, you have to have a great deal of landfill and cement and concrete pilings, etc. This continues to be a true thorn in the side of U.S.-Japanese relations. And while it is true that Prime Minister Hotoyama has attempted to address the concerns of the Okinawans, in fact, he even floated the idea of moving the Futenma Marine Corps Air Station assets 200 kilometers to the northeast of the island of Okinawa to another island called Tokunoshima. That, however, generated negative results, if you will, from the people who live on Tokunoshima. And now the Prime Minister of Japan finds himself somewhat in a corner. I have suggested before that the Marines look at a small offshore island very close to on the northwestern side of Okinawa called Iejima. Interestingly enough, there is already a land strip there. It is a Marine Corps, United States Marine Corps Reserve Air Station. And I'm just curious as to why we haven't. And I must confess, when I was involved some 10 years ago with this initially, I did not, nor was it briefed to me, that there was this Marine Corps Reserve Air Station on this small island just very near the northwestern shore of Okinawa. I think it's very important that we try not to be, shall we say, arrogant with the Japanese in this regard, and at least look at other options. To debate and to get into a difficult debate with our Japanese friends, our Japanese allies, at this time, I don't think serves our interests or theirs. So that's my view of both the general question of power projection and permanent stationing, as well as the specific issue of Futenma and Okinawa.
Excellent. And how has deployment of U.S. troops in South Korea been affected by the uncertain future of the North?
Well, clearly, the difficulty of deciphering what are the intentions of the North Koreans has been and continues to be somewhat problematic. The recent sinking of a South Korean ship near the DMZ waters, if you will, has only enhanced the concern of not just the South Koreans, but of course the allies, to include the United States, with respect to North Korean intentions. I must say, however, and this does apply to the decisions that were made under Secretary Rumsfeld to move to the south of the Han River, away from the DMZ, U.S. military forces in terms of the 2nd Infantry, Army 2nd Infantry Division. This was, I think, a smart move. It included also returning a brigade of the 2nd Infantry Division to the United States. I believe it was returned, the flag went back to Fort Lewis in Washington State. But it is important to recognize that in honoring the agreement, which was originally begun, the discussions were begun back in the late 80s, 1988, I believe, to transfer the command, the U.S. command of the Combined Forces Command, the operational control of both Korean forces and U.S. forces, should there be a conflict, the agreement to transfer that command from the U.S. to the Koreans was one that I think that took a great deal of time to arrive at. And it is supposed to happen next year, 2011. And I believe that right now we should not, as some have suggested, postpone that agreement. It was arrived at on the fundamental basis that we, the United States, over time, should move to from the supported unit, so the supported force, to the supporting force. That we should not we should not be in the lead or lead, but we should be in a supporting role. This was a decision that was reached after many years of negotiation, and I think that it would be wrong to postpone that at this time. It would send, in my view, the wrong signals. The South Korean military is very well equipped, very well trained, very well positioned. I don't think that they need any more time to take on this command responsibility. In fact, I would suggest that it would be the wrong signal, not just to the North Koreans, but especially to the South Koreans, that they were not prepared to take on this important command responsibility. The North Korean army is, as someone once recently said to me, they can't move, they can't shoot, and they can't communicate. They are not an effective force by any means. That does not, I don't mean by saying that, that the North Koreans aren't an uncertain and dangerous force in terms of its missile capability, but in terms of permanent station of hundreds of thousands, or excuse me, less than 100,000 U.S. troops, as has been the case for now nearly 60 years on the peninsula, it's no longer necessary. And we must also look, as I indicated in the beginning here, on what other forces do we have, both strategic and tactical, in the Western Pacific, stationed in Japan, stationed in Okinawa, stationed in Guam, as well as the rotational forces, land, sea, and air, that are constantly moving and training with their allies in that part of the world.
Excellent. And lastly, let's switch continents. Let's talk about Europe. What do you see as the future status of U.S. forces deployed there? And let's talk specifically about Italy and Germany.
Again, decisions were made back in the middle, in 2003, 2004. Secretary Rumsfeld, shortly after he became the Secretary of Defense, in fact, in the summer of 2001, directed the regional combatant commanders to do an in-depth analysis and review the basing strategy within their area of operational responsibility. This was, to be sure, an antecedent the request by the administration, by President Bush and Secretary Rumsfeld, to the Congress to be granted a base realignment and closure authority. Secretary Rumsfeld realized that it was absolutely imperative to do a deep dive, if you will, an in-depth analysis of our basing strategy, our global presence and basing strategy worldwide. He did that. It revealed a number of different aspects, some cost-wise, that is to say, there is a significant cost associated with keeping in the original, as was the case, the 1st Armored Division and the 1st Infantry Division in Germany. It was a permanent change of station for our military personnel. Their families were there. We had schools, we had bases, we had theaters, we had commissaries. The real question was, as I said in the very beginning, permanent basing is not a power projection and the commitment to the safety and security of, in this case, our NATO allies is not a function anymore, it seems to me, of permanent basing. We decided, Secretary Rumsfeld decided, to bring back the two division flags, bring them back to the United States, the 1st Infantry Division flag and the 1st Armored Division flag. But remaining in Germany would be brigades of both divisions that over time would rotate back to the United States on a permanent basis. However, it was done with the idea in mind, the philosophy, the policy in mind, that battalions and even brigades would permanently rotate through Europe to train with and to interoperate with our NATO allies, both in the training areas that already exist, such as Grafenwehr in Germany, and the training areas that have now newly been developed in Romania, and also I believe there's going to be one, an upgraded one in Poland, to recognize the importance of training rotation of battalion and even brigade-sized combat units and their enablers deploying from stateside installations to these upgraded ranges, as I said, in Germany and Romania. This trains and exercises our total logistical capabilities to plan for and to execute long-range deployments. Now, it does require that we have pre-positioned stocks of equipment, which carries a cost, to be sure. They've got to be in the right overseas locations, and that we also, yes, have a response force in the Middle East, as has been discussed. And to your question about Italy, we do have permanently stationed in Vicenza, in Italy, the 173rd Airborne Brigade, as well as air assets in the nearby U.S. airfield at Aviano. This is a serious commitment on our part to the defense and the support of our allies in NATO, as well as in support, if necessary, to requirements that may come down the pike in the future in the Middle East. So my view is that we should continue to move forward with the plan as outlined and agreed upon in 2004 and 2005, 2006, and it should be viewed in no means as a lessening of a commitment by virtue of the permanent rotation, training rotation of battalions and units, logistical air units, and of course, remember, we still have permanently stationed and rotational naval forces in the Mediterranean, as well as United States Air Force assets in the United Kingdom, as well as in Germany and Italy.
Ray, thank you so much. And remember, everyone, you can watch Ray and all of our other Global Security Forum panelists live on May 13th, starting at 8 a.m. on CSIS.org.